Hello?
Time to awaken. To your call inside. Time to awaken.
Well, good evening and welcome, friends, to Voices of the Sacred Feminine, whether you're across town or across the globe. That cut opening tonight's show was called Awaken by Alea Deo. It certainly is time to awaken into a new paradigm shift of caring, sharing, and partnership. It is, after all, supposed to be about the we and the us, not the I and the me. Nature teaches us we are interdependent, and too many of us don't realize that or certainly don't act that way, like Republicans who are willing to let Americans suffer and die to undermine Obama's presidency with their resistance to help anyone with health care or unemployment insurance when they are in large part responsible for the jobs being shipped overseas and there being few good-paying jobs left in America these days. And, of course, they don't want equal pay for women or the minimum wage raised, even when they see families with the breadwinner making the minimum wage or forced onto food stamps, which they want to cut too. Hey, you know what? Maybe the plan is to turn all the poor and sick who die under a bridge into Soylent Green. Remember that movie? Well, if you're a little too young, Google it. I think you'll get a laugh. It might be funny if it wasn't so serious. You know, Democrats have to turn out in the 2014 election or the Republicans could take back the Senate, and that would mean the guys forcing vaginal probes up women's yonis, the guys wanting to limit women's access to contraception will have free rein to do what they want to do. Not a pretty picture for progress. Well, I guess if you've been listening to me, you just got a jolt of the bees buzzing around in my bonnet tonight. Hey, also, go to Amazon right now while you're listening. Can you do that? Can you do two things at once? Will you be able to keep listening and go to Amazon? Well, if you can continue to listen and go to Amazon, go there. Please pre-order my new book, Goddess Calling. If you pre-order on Amazon, they are offering a 20% discount. You know, pre-orders on books are very important, and I sure appreciate your help. It's less than $20 with shipping, and it's got great reviews from Jean Houston, Barbara Walker, Z Budapest, Joan Norton, Ava from the Goddess Temple, Isadora Forrest, Liz Fisher, lots of other people. So please do it. Do it now, and thank you, thank you, thank you. And, you know, while we're on the subject, if you're in the Southern California area on April 19th, please save the date, again, April 19th, for the book launch party for my new book, Goddess Calling. I'm doing this great presentation on the faces of Goddess in Washington, D.C., and the name of the event is Founding Mothers, Goddess in Washington, and Liberation Theology of the Sacred Feminine for Women and Men. It's going to be from 7 to 10 p.m. at the Goddess Temple. And, you know, if you've ever wondered about goddess sites in and around Washington, D.C., and the possible connection between the Founding Fathers and Goddess, well, my visual presentation will offer some tantalizing clues. You will leave with few doubts they ever intended the United States to be a Christian nation. And if you've yet to visit the internationally acclaimed Goddess Temple, the only one of its kind in the world, this is the perfect opportunity for a visit to see what's new and glorious at the temple, including the new centerpiece, the larger-than-life-size Sekhmet in the sanctuary on her pyramid throne. Yes. Yes, it is that amazing. It is as amazing as it sounds. Other activities scheduled for the evening will be a brief reading from my third and newest book, Goddess Calling, Inspirational Messages and Meditations of Sacred Feminine Liberation Theology. We have some awesome talent that's going to be entertaining the people attending. I'll be talking about that in the coming weeks. There's going to be a mini ritual, a raffle for lovely items, including some objects from my sacred travels to goddess sites around the world. There's going to be a penny book sale, Q&A, refreshments, food, and some other plans still on the drawing board. So please don't miss it. April 19th, 7 to 10 at the Goddess Temple in Irvine. And RSVPs are appreciated. Okay, enough of that. Let's talk about tonight's show. First up, we have Laura Carrillo of The Goddess Show. She's with us to discuss feng shui and space clearing to make the most of your life as we start 2014 anew. We're also going to be talking about Chinese New Year's, which starts in a couple days. And these methods she will chat with us about will help you kickstart your home, your resolutions, and your personal renewal. And then following Laura, we have Jeanette Clancy back with us, who will discuss the new pope, parallels between Christian and pagan practices, atheism versus materialism, sexist God talk, and how that language permeates our psyche so much that we don't even realize the misogyny and the detrimental effects. So stay tuned with me for the entire show, and you'll be able to hear all of that good stuff. So without any more delay, let me introduce Laura to you and welcome her to the show. She is a Los Angeles-based feng shui consultant who specializes in space planning and space clearing. Her practice is called Narrative Space, and she helps people edit their environments and their lives to tell their ideal personal narrative. You can hire Laura as a feng shui consultant and find out more about her on our website at narrativespacefengshui.com. She also originated and hosts a self-cultivation channel on YouTube called The Goddess Show, where she interviews guests that have an expertise in the healing arts, energy medicine, metaphysical and spiritual practices. Perhaps they're also cultivating beauty, art, or any goddess-related activities. The show serves as a forum and promotional vehicle for self-cultivation in all of these areas. And periodically, she has fun with feng shui segments and shares her own expertise in feng shui. And I have to say, I was lucky enough to be a guest on the show a while back, and it was a lot of fun. And pretty soon, I'll be back, maybe in March. So we'll keep you posted on that as well. So, Laura, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for your time tonight. I know you're a busy lady.
Thank you so much for inviting me back.
Well, you know, it's the perfect time of year for this. Wouldn't you say, you know, as people try to start fresh and start anew in January, you know, with their, as they try to reinvent themselves, I mean, isn't it a great idea to also work on their space?
Absolutely. We've got, you know, we're in January, so it's the new year, and then we're about to go into the Chinese New Year, which is on Friday. So either way, it's a great fresh start for everybody. And, you know, my process is called Narrative Space because in my thinking, your home is basically serves as this mirror that tells your narrative. And if you don't like your story, then edit the space and, you know, rewrite the script. So this is the perfect time to take a look at your story and think about what you'd like to see different. And then edit and see the changes come to life.
You know, I liked how you phrased that, you know, because I really do believe, you know, January, you know, it's kind of cliche and trite to talk about resolutions. You know, most of us start resolutions. We don't really see them through. But, you know, if you really want to change your life, if you really want to, I like to call it reinvent yourself, you know, maybe you finally sick of things not working and you want to change and you want to come out as somebody new. I mean, you can do that and you have the energies of the universe helping you right now. I like to, you know, think Bridget, for instance. You know, she's the goddess of water, sacred waters, all her wells around the world. She's also the goddess of fire. And what do you get when you put fire and water together? You get steam. You know, that's sort of locomotion that helps propel you forward. So we have the energies of the universe behind us this time of year.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I like how you phrase that.
New Year, you said that starts Friday. Tell us a little bit about that and why that's important to what we're talking about today.
Well, it's important in the sense that it's another calendar year start, and a lot of people actually look at that time of year as a fresh start, particularly when it comes to feng shui. So I just thought it was sort of interesting to me. I didn't realize when I scheduled this how close it was to the Chinese New Year, and then I thought, oh, that's perfect timing to talk about feng shui and space clearing and editing your space, because it's just, this is the time of year when people need to do that.
Well, you know, and if you're in a town that has Chinatown in it, like L.A. does, and I'm sure other cities around the country, I know San Francisco has a Chinatown, I would hazard a guess New York has a Chinatown, there's probably lots of cities with Chinatown or something similar, they're probably going to be having wonderful demonstrations and celebrations in the streets this weekend, wouldn't you think?
I would imagine so. And you know, it's also, I feel like you get this sense at this time of year of fresh beginnings and fresh starts, and when you look at your life, your home is such a reflection of what's going on with you. And so doing something as simple as editing and cleaning and clutter clearing, even that alone is a form of feng shui, of a very basic form of feng shui that can help people have a fresh start and see what they don't need, sort of release the past and embrace this new, you know, this new year, this new time in their life, this new chapter.
Right, right. Well, you know, well, someday I'm going to have you over to where I live, and just to see your reaction. It's got a lot of stuff in there, so you would probably consider it cluttered. But, you know, it looks like an Egyptian temple, you know, the way we've painted the walls, the statuary that we have around. And you can even see a picture of it on my website if listeners want to go take a look at KarenTate.com on the page that has my bio. There are a few pictures there. And, you know, at some point I'd love to just hear what, you know, you'd probably want to get in there and and really
clean it out, but
I wonder what it says about me.
To really give you a proper reaction, but I'm sure there's like a purpose and absolutely a story and a narrative happening there that is a complete reflection of who you are and what's going on with you. And the fact that you have a temple makes perfect sense, knowing you.
Well, yeah, I guess so. But, you know, sometimes I feel like I'm sort of drowning in all the stuff. But I like it, you know.
I like that stuff around me. Yeah. But it sounds amazing. I can't wait to see it.
Well, thank you. Thank you. We'll have to figure that out sometime. So let's think about the best place to start. Well, you already said your consulting practice, the name of it is Narrative Space. Now, you know, I always think of narrative as something you know, an English assignment, something that you write. How are you using Narrative Space related to, you know, feng shui and physical space?
Well, the objects in your home, like everything from the art, your use of color, texture, the way you have things laid out and presented, are all creating a narrative. Like when you walk into someone's home, you really get a feel for who that person is. Their energy is permeated in the space, and their story is all over the place. I mean, it's in the art, it's in the... whether it's clean or not, what kind of colors they're attracted to. Are they into primary colors, or are they into lots of beige and cream, or are they more black and white? You can get a lot of information about a person and who they are and what their story is based on their home.
I get it. So it's what their story is. That makes perfect sense. Well, whenever you come to my house, you are going to see animal print in Egyptian colors. So that'll be interesting interpretation you'll have to figure out for me. So feng shui, I think maybe some people, maybe if you're Asian, and I'm making gross stereotypical guesses here, okay? I admit that up front. But I'm thinking unless maybe you're Asian, you don't take feng shui seriously. So please share with listeners why they should. You know, what are the benefits of feng shui?
Well, there's lots of benefits, but I do want to address the issue of it being an Asian practice. The energy grids and the practice of space planning and using energy and space and the environment is, it spans across all cultures, including, you know, obviously feng shui in Asian culture, but also in Western culture, we have sacred geometry, which our churches apply, and in India, they have something called Vastu. So it's not really just an Asian practice. It's just the most commonly heard of. And then as far as the benefits of feng shui, there are so many, because feng shui is the art of placement, but it is also an earth science. And it takes into account everything from the elements to proper placement, energy flow, qi, or energy, which means the same thing. It takes into account safety, comfort, beauty. There's so many different elements to it that people don't realize. I'm not just looking at whether or not, you know, the space is a full square, which is an important thing. Like if there's any missing areas in the Bagua, which is the it is the energetic grid in feng shui that addresses all the life stations, and there's 9 of them. And if there's one missing, then that area of life is lacking in some way, and there's ways of fixing that or cures for that in feng shui. But I'm not just looking at that. I'm looking at elemental balance. I'm looking at your story. I'm looking at your art. I'm looking at so many different things in order to help somebody edit their space in such a way that is a reflection of the life that they want to live and not just the life that they happen to be living.
Okay. Well, and you know, and I'm wondering too, because part of this is space clearing, I'm thinking about when somebody blesses a house, you know, maybe when somebody tries to clear bad energy out of a house, when, you know, you maybe bless the space or purify the space before a ritual. Is that all sort of along the same lines?
It's part of what I do. I do feng shui and I do space clearing as well. And it's just as important, because it's like decorating a house without cleaning it. You know, you want the energy in the home to also be clear and positive. And particularly when you move into a new home, for instance, that physical space has been impacted by the previous owners, residents, and whatever energetically they were going through or experience in that home remains. And so when you move into that new space, in order for you to fully encompass that space and have it be your own, you have to release the energy of the previous occupants and then set your own positive intentions for your life there. And so a space clearing would be absolutely, you know, important in a new home. Also, anytime, there's so many times and when you should be space clearing, like when you move, if you've been sick for a while, if there's been a lot of fighting in a home, you need to recalibrate the energy. Also, if you just need a change in your life or you've been depressed, that's a great time to do a space clearing. And space clearing is really just using alchemy, the alchemy of fire, water, intention, sound, scent, in creating ceremony and setting an intention and basically alchemically changing the energetic vibration in that home with a specific intention.
Wow. You know, I'm not trivializing anything you're saying here, but I couldn't help but my mind went to these shows on television where you see, you know, that places are haunted. And I'm wondering, has anybody ever called you to clear space in a house that they thought, you know, maybe, you know, there were still spirits who lived there?
Yeah, I have done that, and I'm actually adding some alchemical tools to my practice for to deepen my practice for exactly those occasions. But I did a fire ritual for a couple who had just moved into a home where the bedroom in particular where they slept had this really heavy, sad energy that was palpable. I mean, they felt it. They asked me to come clear the space. I mean, I did a whole house blessing, clearing the feng shui for it. And in addition to that, I did this fire ceremony to release whatever energetic blocks or you know, stagnant energy was in that particular room and home. And after that, they had no more problems. But
wow.
Yeah, and I'm going to be doing dowsing in the future. I'm getting certified in that, and I've just added another sort of protocol of sound. I was using Tofaggio frequencies, which are these ancient sound frequencies that are supposed to help with higher consciousness, but now I'm incorporating singing bowls with different frequencies that because sound is such a powerful alchemical tool that permeates the space. So in any case, yes, I've been called to do that, and I'm adding more and more tools to my practice for when it's called for. When there are cases when there are certain energies that are pretty heavy and deep that need to be released.
Right, right. And what an incredible responsibility that is for you, too. And, you know, as you were talking about how powerful sound is, it reminded me of women I know who actually use sound for healing. You know, there are different sounds that they say heals different parts of your body. You know, I think there's so much about the natural world, and I guess I sort of consider sound something from the natural world that you know, because you create sound using the elements, I guess.
Right.
You know, I think there's so much about it that that so many of us don't know or overlook or marginalize, when it could really, you know, maybe really benefit our lives. I mean, I've heard of people taking sound baths. You know, I mean, I haven't experienced it myself, but I mean, all of it sounds really interesting.
Well, there's some videos on YouTube where they use sound in sacred geometry to create different formations with sand. So they'll play a certain frequency, and then the sand will move into a certain formation based on that frequency. So there's actual scientific proof and examples of how powerful sound is, and all, you know, alchemy is. But, you know, just recently, the singing bowl that I got, and I chose it really because it was the size I thought I could travel with to go see clients. I thought, oh, this is a nice crystal singing bowl that I could literally hold in my palm and take around someone's space and clear the space energetically with it. But when I went to purchase it, they told me, oh, you selected F frequency. And F frequency is for the heart chakra. And it just was ironic to me that I was drawn to this particular bowl because, you know, the heart, love, that's kind of my thing. And I was just really excited. And I'm really looking forward to bringing that to people's homes and lives. And yeah, I mean, there's so many different frequencies. And for me, I think love is the one that everybody could use. So I'm really glad that that's the one I chose.
Yeah, and you know, singing bowls are just incredible. I mean, they really just do bliss you out. They do me anyway. You know, I was just I was imagining, Laura, you taking one of your clients and with a camera person and going through their house and allowing them you to video their house, and there on camera you kind of analyze what you see and make recommendations. Yeah, I bet that would be a lot of fun and really interesting.
You know, that's definitely in the works. It's just a matter of, you know, a lot of people are very private, and
sure,
when they call me, they've got really specific issues that they want to resolve, and not everybody wants to be on TV.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm sure that I will find the right candidate for that particular example. I do have other videos, though. I do have a video on Love Chi for the bedroom, and you know, I had to take some of my own advice. After doing that video, I actually made some edits to my own bedroom, which completely transformed my love life, I must say. So watch that Love Chi video. There's some really good advice on there.
Okay. Well, and, you know, it was really interesting when you said about the couple that you had to do the fire ceremony for. Why don't you give us another example of something like that, you know, what you had to prescribe for someone because of a problem in their house?
Well, what I'm going to do is give you an example of when I also use alchemy in a ceremonial approach with a couple that I was working with. And this particular couple was struggling to adopt a child. So what I did, you know, I did what I typically do, I did the feng shui for the home, and I looked at the narrative in the home and how it spoke to the fact that they were inviting a child into their home, and what we could do to edit the space to invite this child into the home, but to really create impact. Once you do the feng shui, the alchemy, I think, is really important to pair that with what you've done in the home as far as the narrative goes. And in their case, I did a blessing ceremony inviting a child into their home. And within 6 days, they had an adoptive family contact them, and they had a little baby shortly thereafter. So,
wow.
And they've been trying for over 2 years. So
wow.
It was something that, you know, you could say, oh, maybe it's coincidence. I'm like, yeah, is it? You know, 6 days later, something really shifted in their lives.
That's incredible.
And basically I use things around their home. Like, for instance, I use her wedding necklace, and I put it on an altar. I use elements that represent children and creativity in feng shui. So in feng shui, the children and creativity gua, which is one of the 9 guas in the ba gua, the children and creativity gua, the element for that gua is metal. And the shape that represents that element is round. So I had a round bowl. We had metallic objects. We had a lot of different things to create an alchemy, as well as a ceremony to invite this little presence into their lives. And it was such a powerful experience for me because really I was still toying and playing with the alchemy of blessing ceremonies. And it was so successful that now I really recommend it for all my clients, especially when they have a specific intention in mind.
So it sounds like there's several steps to this process.
Yeah, and it also depends on the intention. You know, their intention was very specific. They wanted an adopted child. So the narrative that I created was based on that. Then in the case of the couple with the creepy energy in the bedroom, well, that was about releasing that stagnant energy and then, you know, basically recalibrating the space and making it their own and blessing it as this new home. They were also pregnant, she was pregnant, they were going to have a child. So I needed to make sure that home was clear of any sort of negative presence and to bless it for this new life that was entering into their world. So each story, each alchemy is going to be different depending on the client and what they're looking for.
So now you've used the term gua. Can you sort of explain what that is?
So in Feng Shui, there's an energetic map or grid called the Bagua. So it's B-A-G-U-A. And it has 9 different guas within the Bagua, and they're just these life centers. So I'll tell you what all 9 of them are, because they address basically every area of life. So you've got wealth and prosperity. Everybody's interested in money. You've got fame and reputation, love and marriage, health and family. Health is in the middle. Health and family is more family as far as I'm concerned, and then health is in the middle of the space. Then there's creativity in children, knowledge and self-cultivation, career, and finally travel and helpful people. So there's a lot of areas of life that can to address. And every area is represented by some portion of your home. And I also apply the Bagua not only to the home as a whole, but each individual room. So you can replicate that map or that energy grid in each individual room as well. So it gets kind of complicated, because it's not just like, oh, this is the love gua for the whole home. It's like, yeah, it's the love gua for the whole home, but it's just as important that the love gua in the bedroom be addressed as well. In fact, the bedroom is one of your biggest power centers, because it's where you sleep, where you make love, where you, you know, regenerate, all of that.
So have you ever ended up with a client that, you know, their house was just out of whack, you know, the windows and doors are in the wrong direction, you know, maybe it's cluttered, or, you know, they don't want to, I don't know, get rid of stuff, or, can you work around all of those things?
Well, you can certainly edit. I have been to some really challenging spaces, for sure. I've had clients that had a really tiny, tiny home with big, big furniture and that didn't even fit, and you could barely walk, and it just made no sense. It was like, and their lives were challenging as a result. There was no room for anything new to enter their lives, because it was so jam-packed and hard to get around and hard to maneuver. And I think anyone who calls me is frustrated enough with their living situation and motivated enough that they would call a Feng Shui consultant, that they're willing to make some changes, if not all of the changes that I recommend.
Right.
So I have yet to work with someone that didn't at least make 90% of the changes that I recommend, if not all of them. And usually people are pretty motivated and they want my help. So, you know,
so
if you're going to pay
check
out, why would...
What kind of changes are generally called for? Are you rearranging furniture? Or are you adding new elements? Are you painting walls? Or thousands of different kinds of things.
It can be many different things, but for the most part, it's really just about editing what you've already got. A lot of people have everything they need. It just needs to be rearranged a little bit. Like, for instance, you may have some really beautiful art in your home. Like, you may have some romantic art, but maybe it's just not placed in the most auspicious way that can benefit you. So maybe you have this romantic, beautiful painting, and it's in your career gua, which is nice, but it really would benefit you so much more in your love gua. So simply by showing them, like, hey, see this painting? This is great. You know where it would really help you out? Over here in your love gua. And so a lot of it is just kind of rearranging what you already have and then maybe editing a few things, if, you know. And occasionally, yeah, you'll bring in some new elements. But it's really looking at the space and editing, cleaning it up a little.
Now, you mentioned, I think you said something about you mentioned an altar. Is that something that sometimes you have people incorporate into the house?
They can do that. When I was referring to an altar, if I'm doing a space clearing, there is an altar that I create in some way, shape, or form to basically ground the space clearing and give it a certain intention, because you by the way you create your altar, whether you're using certain elements or certain, you know, maybe you're using the Buddha or you're using a goddess like Lakshmi or whatever, however you're building this altar, that there's a specific narrative and intention that grounds the space clearing ceremony. And so I always use an altar of some sort in someone's home when doing a space clearing. And mostly,
so it's a temporary altar that you're putting up.
Yes, like a temporary altar. But I think it's great for people to have an area in their home where they meditate or where they have, you know, like maybe a vision board or whatever it is. I think that's great. But when I'm referring to an altar, it's mostly in reference to a space clearing ceremony where I do a makeshift altar using largely what they have in their home. And I may bring some things to incorporate into it. But I want it to be their thing that energetically represent something to them.
Okay. And for listeners who might be curious, I would imagine this is something that you would have to do, you know, you could only help people who live locally, or is there a way to do this from afar?
I mean, I can do certain things via Skype. But honestly, like, and I know a lot of people do the distance stuff. I really like the experience, to experience a space and make my recommendations based on what I'm seeing, feeling, hearing, etc., especially with space clearing.
Right.
Feng Shui, there's a lot you can do virtually if somebody can take, you know, a camera throughout the home and I can really see what's going on. But for an actual space clearing ceremony, my preference is to, you know, come out and physically do the space clearing.
Sure,
even,
sure,
even
yeah,
with,
yeah.
That
makes perfect sense. Makes perfect
yeah,
sense.
Yeah, there's a lot you can do virtually, particularly on the feng shui side.
Okay. And, you know, I'm also thinking about, you know, people who need to have, I think you call it editing the negative.
Yes.
You know, talk about that a little bit. I mean, what are examples of some of editing the negative?
All right. Let's say you recently had a breakup and you have pictures and items from that relationship that are in your home. So they're energetically holding the vibration of that relationship. And so you can't really move forward until that energy is out of your physical space. So I think that's a really good thing to edit, because it's hard to move on if you're constantly reminded of that person and you're basically living with them.
Right, right. Got it. Makes sense. And I'm wondering, too, you know how astrologically we go into Mercury retrograde and things like that? Is that ever
yes,
something
and we're about
you have
to do that in February on the 6th. So
on
FYI,
the 6th.
People, 6th, February 6th, Mercury retrograde.
Well, I was about to ask, does that affect what you do or what you recommend?
I like to do space clearing ceremonies near like new moons or full moons, because I think that timing does have an impact. But feng shui, I think, can be done at any time. Space clearing, I think, should be done with cycles of the moon. That's my preference.
Okay. And before we talk about the goddess show, is there anything else you wanted to say about the feng shui or the space clearing?
Just that when you're looking at your home, particularly your bedroom, if it feels like paradise, then you've got it right. But if it doesn't, then give me a call.
Okay. Someone sent me a message through the chat room to ask you a question. They want me to ask you, is it possible for you to give some idea what you charge?
Yeah, I do. My consultation started at about $300, and then it's really based on square footage. So most, let's say, if something is over 1,500 square feet, then it goes to 25 cents per square foot. So you can just kind of do the math. It's very democratic, and it's based on how much time and energy, but there's a certain amount of inherent time and energy that are going to go into the work, no matter how small the space is, which is why I start at 300. And then it's like 350 up to about 1,500 square feet, and then it goes to it does go to 25 cents per square foot.
Okay.
And it's very fair and very reasonable compared. You know, I've seen what other people charge, and I think I'm very competitive.
Okay, fair enough. So now I've had fun with you on your Goddess show before, but why don't you tell listeners a little bit about it and how they can find it and what you want them to know about it?
Oh, well, it is my YouTube channel, and it's a self-cultivation show. I've always been interested in esoteric knowledge, anything from, you know, feng shui, numerology, Reiki, astrology, Vedic astrology, all those kind of subject matter that psychics, mediums, all that kind of stuff that people tend to be curious about but want, if they're going to reach out and seek that kind of help, they want to go to someone who's authentic. And so in a way, it's my way of sharing that kind of knowledge with people and introducing them to people that have this expertise and showing them that it's really not so woo-woo out there. I mean, these are real people with a real skill set. I always, you know, make sure that my guests are authentic and that their work is something that I want to share with people, that I think that they are really wonderful, talented healers in one, you know, in some shape or form. And so it's really not only my curiosity and interest, but it's also kind of sharing it with other people.
Okay, and well, I know it. I know I found out about you through Joe Norton, who you know, knows
her.
So much about Mary Magdalene. What are some, you know, who are some of the other people or topics you've had on the Goddess Show?
Oh, and then obviously the goddess culture is a major part of it. But as I just mentioned, you know, I have healers. I've had a hypnotist. She was amazing. I mean, talk about the subconscious mind and how it runs the show. I've had an animal psychic. I've had a Reiki master. I've had you. anyone who has expertise in goddess culture, I've had Joan, who wrote The Mary Magdalene Within and has run these Mary Magdalene circles. It's sort of a feminist show to some degree, but it's really... it's really about the esoteric side and feminine empowerment through that.
Well, you know, you think about it, we really have to take responsibility for our own education. And our education can't stop when, you know, with you know, what we learn from institutions, what we learn from the pulpit, what we learn from the dinner table, you know, by our family. In fact, some of that stuff we learn, we want to toss it, you know, and start fresh, you know, because maybe sometimes that doesn't even work. But, you know, so many of the things you mentioned, you know, the feng shui, the hypnotism, you know, learning about goddess, you know, the Reiki, all of this stuff, you know, some people, I know that there are bishops, Christian bishops, who tell people that stuff like this is of the devil, you know, Reiki and yoga. You know, it's really it's really incredible how fearful some people are.
And apply it, like, the churches are, and they're built on sacred ground, and they're using sacred geometry. They're looking at the energetic grids of the earth. So, you know, it's ironic to me that a priest would have a problem with feng shui or anything like that when, in fact, they use a form of feng shui and know that the earth has certain, you know, power centers and energy grids that impact our lives.
Well, I think you maybe give them too much credit. I'm not so sure they know that, but maybe the people who knew to build the church there knew that.
Yeah. Well, I think the higher ups know that, and maybe, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Regular practitioners may not. But in any case, yeah, it's unfortunate that some people have a negative perspective on these practices, and I think it's mostly based on fear,
yeah,
and misunderstanding.
Yeah.
I mean, I've had people thinking that feng shui is in some way a religion. It's absolutely not a religion. It's got nothing to do with religion, or that it's somehow like weird or magic or evil. I'm like, no, it's an earth science. It's really just working with nature and your environment and having a positive relationship with that.
Yeah.
And how could that possibly be seen as something negative or wrong?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, you have to remember that the church decided that anything of the body, anything of nature, you know, those are things that should either be taboo or discounted. And if people still think that way, then, you know, they're working, they're having to get beyond, you know, those religious, those ingrained religious beliefs, you know, even though
and
it seems
really
kind of ridiculous to us. But I'm sorry, say again?
Karen, I think what you're saying is all of that was done to control the masses. I mean, they used to have mystery schools in the time of Jesus and Mary Magdalene. I mean, all the pagan culture and goddess culture is really based on nature and working with the earth and using alchemy. And all of that has been submerged, you know, by a patriarchal society. But it was a huge part of our history and culture, particularly
right.
when women were more empowered.
And I think, too, we've lost so much of that knowledge that we could benefit from. And, you know, what's funny is, you know, I remember when it sort of quietly came out that the Reagans used to consult an astrologer. You know, Nancy used to make her husband consult an astrologer. And, you know, if the climate... the political climate had been then what it is now, I can just imagine. I mean, they would have thought it was witchcraft or something, you know. They would have, I don't know, or maybe not. You know, maybe it would be like they are now, you know, like George Bush could do anything and nobody said anything, but just let, you know, a Democratic president do something and it's always horrible. So maybe they would have figured out a way to accept, you know, that crazy astrology that, you know, maybe his wife thrust on the poor man, you know.
I think they would have found a way to make it okay because it was Reagan, you know.
Right, exactly. Well, Laura, what is there anything else you want to share with listeners before we say goodnight?
Sure. What you were asking before about the Goddess Show on YouTube, and I'm really easy to find. You can look up Goddess Show or just look up my name, Laura, L-A-U-R-A, Carrillo, and it's C-A-R-R-I-L-L-O, two R's, two L's. So either way of looking me up on there, I think it's almost faster if you just look me up by my name. And my website for Narrative Space Feng Shui is really simple. It's just Narrative Space Feng Shui.
Okay.
And I am on Twitter now, and it's Laura Carrillo at Narrative Space. So I'll be posting different things. I'm going to be teaching a class, a workshop for Emerson College in February, which I'm really excited about, on Feng Shui, and kind of talking about, you know, the script, your script, and editing the script. And if you want to change the story, you know, you have to edit the space. And I'm really excited to be teaching entertainment industry students that, because I think they'll get that concept, particularly because they work with, you know, set design. And set design is largely telling a story about the character. So they can sort of apply feng shui to that.
Okay. Well, you know what? I think you've really hit on something there. And, you know, Laura, you are such a delight, and I love what you're doing. And one day I really am going to actually have you come to my house. I'm just so afraid you're going to tell me I need to do things that I'm not ready to do yet. But,
No. I'm going to work with what you've got going on. It'll probably be really small edits, if anything.
Well, we'll see. We'll see. I'll invite you over and we'll see. Well, it's been a delight, Laura. Thank you so much. And, you know, I hope some of my listeners get in touch with you and use your expertise to, you know, get their lives and their spaces on track for this new year.
Absolutely. I look forward to hearing from your listeners. And actually, anybody who calls me from Voices of the Sacred Feminine, I will extend a 15% discount. Just let me know that you heard about me through Karen Tate's show, Voices of the Sacred Feminine, and I'll be happy to give you a discount through February. So,
thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I would love to work with some of your guests, and, you know, it would be really fun for me.
Well, thank you. That's awfully generous of you. I appreciate it. I hope you do get some calls. Well, I guess we will say good night for now, and, you know, until we get together again. And have a wonderful 2014, Laura.
Blessings and happy Chinese New Year to everybody.
Yeah, absolutely. Friday night, don't forget. Thank you so much, Laura.
Okay.
Have a great week. Bye.
Okay, bye.
Well, we are crossing the threshold into the second half of the show here, and I see that my next guest, Jeanette, is actually on the switchboard, and I'm going to say hello, Jeanette.
Hello, here I am.
It's so good to talk to you again. Let me share with listeners your bio, and then you know, we'll start our chat. We have a lot of interesting things to get to tonight. Jeanette Blonigan Clancy, she's an educator and writer. She lives in the small town of Avon, Minnesota. I'm sure she must be an iceberg up there tonight. besides writing, she supervises teacher candidates for university. She was brought up a Catholic, and she still lives in a culture that's mostly Catholic. She got her master's degree in theology, but she dissents from Catholic teaching in her writing, and she belongs to a community that plans woman priest liturgies. I love her. She's such a renegade and a heretic. besides writing books, she's written for many periodicals, including Letters and the National Catholic Reporter. Frequently, she appears on opinion pages, writing about religion and politics. She has her own blog, which I enjoy reading and posting to. It's called GodIsNotThreeGuys.com, and the three is a numeral rather than the word GodIsNotThreeGuys.com. And she is very soon going to be appearing in my own anthology from Voices of the Sacred Feminine. About 40 prior guests have contributed essays, or we have their transcripts, and an anthology will be out before the end of the year. And I am so happy to say that Jeanette is one of the contributors talking about a really difficult issue and an important one, sexist God talk, because it affects so many of us, and it's kind of insidious, and we don't even realize how we've just sort of accepted the misogyny. Does that sort of ring true for you, Jeanette?
Oh, for sure, yes. And I feel the phrase sexist God talk is something that I don't know if I can say I made it up or not, because it really came from a book by Rosemary Radford Ruther, who is she is an acclaimed Catholic theologian, and she wrote a book called God and Sexism. No. Anyway, God Talk and Sexism. I think that was it. Yes, God Talk and Sexism, or Sexism and God Talk. Anyway, so she was close to coming up with sexist God talk, which is what I talk about. And, yes, you hit the nail on the head. We are not even aware of how it has damaged the human psyche to constantly be referring to the source, the origin, the mother, father, the source of all that is, the great mater Dei, the mother of all that is. You know, it's and it's her, and it's him, and it's all of it. But to consistently and exclusively refer to it as he, him, and his has done great harm to the human race.
I want to talk about that. We're also going to talk about Pope Francis and your latest blog theme, Atheism and Materialism. And if we get to it, if we have time, we'll talk about some of the traditions that Christians and pagans share, but probably Christians don't have a clue. But, you know, maybe is it possible for you to give some examples of the sexist God talk? Because it might really surprise people, because maybe even my listeners who know about this stuff, you know, maybe these will be examples that have even sort of went right over their head.
Oh, I don't have any right in front of me, but every single liturgical piece, it's constantly around. When I go to, I still attend Mass, and, well, I won't say any more about that, except that the language offends me. And I'm not one who can remember things easily, but it's always he and him, and we're always praying to the Lord and the Father and his mercies, and he is the Father of everything. We never in the Catholic Church, in fact, we are not allowed to pray to her. We're not allowed even to pray to it.
But Jeanette, you know, we've been brought up to think that that's normal. And that there's nothing wrong with that. So tell listeners why it isn't normal and why it's not okay.
Well, because we know that whatever we're praying to, what we call God, and we just have to say what we call God. We don't know what it is. It's ineffable. It's incomprehensible. And it couldn't possibly just be one single gender. It is the origin. It is the creator of gender. It's whatever it is from it that gender comes, both maleness and femaleness. How could it be just one human-like gender? What? One male. It's illogical. It's irrational. But
that's for the critical thinker, Jeanette, though. I mean, wouldn't you say that's for the critical thinker? I mean, don't you think that this was really a strategy by a patriarchal church to deliberately cut women out of the equation? I mean, we know women...
I don't think it was in the past. I think in the past, it was done, millennia before what we call the time of Christ, before the common era started, which is, well, it's around the year zero, but we could talk about that too, how that time was decided upon. But anyway, when it was first done, I'm not so sure that it was done deliberately. Well, the thing is that today it is being done deliberately. I have no doubt that the hierarchy that I'm always railing against is quite aware that it would be entirely acceptable to pray to her and to pray to Mother, but they are afraid of losing control, and they really are terribly afraid of women having authority. It shows in the extreme punishment they mete out for anybody accepting women priests, for instance.
Right.
We can just sense how nervous they are about it. And they're just, they're terrified of women having authority.
So is it across the board, though? Is that across the board in the Abrahamic religions, or is it more prevalent in one particular religion or one particular, a brand of religion, you know, Protestants versus Catholics versus Jews versus Islam? You know, where is it the worst?
Joseph Campbell and Carl Jung especially, thinks that it's worse in Protestantism, because in the Catholic Church we still have Mary, the Mother of God, and she was named the Mother of God in, the 6th century or 5th century when there was a church council. And Joseph Campbell and other mythologists point out that the reason the Catholic Church, the official hierarchy, went along with that title for Mary was that people outside were agitating for this because it was a center of the goddess. And I forget which goddess particularly, but the god, you know, there are just various names for the goddess. It was the goddess. And people were in, Mary took the place of other goddesses that were condemned, you know, by the Catholic Church. And so she was given the title Mater Dei, or Mother of God, because people were agitating for it. I'm sorry, I've got this lizard in my throat. And so Mary in the Catholic Church has really occupies the place that the goddess occupied in Hellenistic religions. There are, well, I'm told, I don't know about this, but I read that there are many cathedrals named Notre Dame, or Our Lady. Yeah, maybe you know more about that than I do.
Yeah, I mean, there are lots of them.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, one comes to mind, you know, right in the middle of Paris, you know, Notre Dame Cathedral, you know.
Well, that's the great one.
Yeah.
And Notre Dame means Our Lady. So, but Protestants don't have that veneration for Mary. And so there's a little bit less of the feminine in Protestant religions. But the Abrahamic religions, as you say, they're all patriarchal. Islam got it from Catholicism, from the Protestants. It's Judaism and then Catholicism and then Protestantism and Islam, yes. They're all patriarchal, but I cannot say that the Eastern religions, as much as I know about them, as little as I know about them, I would say that the male is dominant there too, to a lesser extent.
Well, yeah, I mean, in Buddhism, you know, there's definitely patriarchy, and in the Shinto of the Japanese, even though there's Amaterasu, I believe they're very patriarchal. We know the Hindu religion, even though the Indians have never lost the goddess. Some scholars, feminist scholars, say that what happened to the goddess there is she becomes domesticated, she becomes spousified. Because let's face it, look at Mary. You know, look at the archetype of the woman that a patriarchy within Christianity is willing to accept. She's got to be a good girl. She's got to be benign.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, she has lost
all her fire.
You know, she has no sexuality. She's just, you know, one of these giving mothers that's really safe. She doesn't demand anything, does she?
Right. She's been... She wears these pastel clothes. But I think that's more true in the United States. There is a more robust Mary in some other cultures. But I want to tell you something interesting. You mentioned the Eastern, the goddess in the East. My daughter was in the East, in Thailand. I will forget exactly. She was in three different countries. And she said, she brought back for me a figure of Mother Buddha. She said, it's all over. Mother Buddha is very popular. Yes.
I hadn't heard that myself. Wow.
It reminded me, the way she described it, reminded me of in Stearns County, where I live, in central Minnesota, there are statues of Mary sort of in a bathtub stood halfway out of the ground, and that represents a grotto. And then there's a little statue of Mary. These are little grottos to Mary. And the way Molly described, my daughter described finding statues of Mother Buddha all over, it's a little bit like Mary dotting the countryside here where I live.
Wow. Well, you know what? I'm going to have to Google that and see images of her. I know when Roy and I went to Japan, you know, we found some imagery of of the different goddesses. There's Benten over in Japan, and there's some other goddesses besides Amaterasu, and the name is escaping me at the moment. But you also have the rice goddesses over there. You know, just like in Europe, you have the wheat goddess, Demeter, and then in the Americas, you have the corn goddess. You know, you always have the goddess who feeds you, you know.
Well, and then there's Shakti in Hinduism. Shakti is quite important.
Absolutely, absolutely. Mm-hmm. You know, getting back to the sexist guide talk, though, I mean, maybe it's obvious to some of my listeners and maybe it's not, but the very idea that God is male means that if you're a woman, then you're not like God. You know, that means
well,
you're sort of a second-class citizen. Yeah.
Yeah.
That almost psychologically
color.
Sets you up to maybe accept being marginalized, being oppressed, being exploited. I mean, I think so anyway. Do you?
Well, in fact, I think that accounts for some of the sexual assaults, the sexual abuse, the domestic abuse, and all kinds of horrors that we read about in, for instance, Half the Sky by Nicholas Kristof and Cheryl Wu Dunn. You know, the things that they write about. I think that the Catholic Church hierarchy, I come out of the Catholic tradition, and so I hold them more responsible. I think that the hierarchy is, in a roundabout way, should take responsibility for some of the horrors visited on women, the violence against women, because of the damage done psychologically by the exclusive use of male pronouns in reference to what we call God.
Well, it's in the language, but it's also almost in the directives because, you know, I call it Bible ecology because ecology is, you know, how you relate to everything around you. You know, it's not just environmentalism. You know, in Bible ecology, everything is supposed, a man serves God and everything and everybody else is supposed to submit to man. You know, so you have this structure set up. So, sure, husband can beat you. Husband can rape the environment. Husband can, kill off all the buffalo for sport because he's man, you know. You know, he's like a little demigod.
That's the problem is not questioning it. When people say, when they say, oh, it doesn't bother me because I know that God is not just a man, then I know that they are affected by it because the less you're aware of it, the more you're affected by it.
Yeah.
The damage is greater to the extent that you are unconscious. That's the thing. So that's why I keep talking about it, because the greater the awareness, the better it is for everybody.
Well,
I know that I'm not going to change the hierarchy. I'm just trying to create awareness.
Well, yeah, and if you can change the grassroots, I mean, you said that, you know, there was agitation, so they had to throw Mary into the theology. I mean, if there's enough agitation, they will have to evolve or die, you know, or die out. Because I can very easily see how you can connect the dots between God as male, men or superior to, like you said, domestic violence, women not getting paid equal pay, men thinking they can control women's access to birth control, can tell them that they have to stick vaginal probes up their vaginas if they want an abortion. I mean, give me a break. I mean, who do these white men, especially, but I'm sure it's all around the world, it's not just white men, but I only see these old white men on TV telling everybody how we're all supposed to live, and I got to tell you, it doesn't make me happy.
but it's really hopeful that things are changing. They've changed a lot just in my lifetime. Things are so wonderfully different than they were even 5 years ago.
But well, why don't you give some examples for those of us with a shorter reference,
well,
you know, time
instance,
reference?
When I was attending the School of Theology in 1986 to 88, and the phrase, God is not three guys in the sky, blurped up in me because I was so incensed by the constant referrals to Father, Son, and Holy Ghost, and they have Holy Spirit. It was Holy Spirit. And it was always, they were talking about them like three men. And so I started saying, and I said to myself, God is not just three men. God is not three men in the sky. No, God is not three guys in the sky. And I recognized the phrase as a good one. And I started saying it in classes. And at the end of one class, and I thought at the time, I'll have to tell you about the end of one class later. But at the time, I thought, you know, I really want to write a book about this. And this was in 1988. And at the time, I mentioned it to one of the monks who I knew was fine with it. And he said, oh, they're going to throw bricks at you. I was so afraid that might happen. I really, really had visions of being shot down. And my children, this was, you know, before I ever had a cell phone. Not everybody had cell phones back then. And my children told me to get a cell phone because they were afraid, too. They thought that I should not be in the phone book. I'm still in the phone book, and it's not a problem.
Yeah.
And when my book finally came out in, 2007, it was no problem anymore.
Yeah,
it was just
yeah.
amazing, the change.
Yeah.
I can talk about it wherever I go, and people know what I'm talking about. If I had tried to say something back then, well, I just didn't try. I was afraid.
Yeah.
And the few people that I dared to say this to looked at me like, you know, you're in trouble.
Right,
this
right.
is not safe.
Well, yeah, you know, I guess things have gotten a lot more liberal. You think about, you know, people don't think about witches the same because of Hollywood
right.
and Harry Potter and, you know, even goddess. You know, you do have your crazies who think, you know, the Queen of Heaven is in league with the devil or Lilith is in league with
right.
the devil. But you know, they're really the fringe of the fringe, I think. They're just loud, you know.
I think they're afraid of what we were talking about. They're afraid of women getting power. They're afraid of the change. And the amount of terror they show also demonstrates that things are moving. They're changing, and they feel this in the air, and that's what terrifies them. And
good. I'm glad they feel the ground moving beneath their feet.
Well, and it's hopeful to us because we know that we're making a dent, more than a dent.
Right. Well, tell me about, you know, I want to get to the atheism and materialism, but tell us what happened after class that time you were referencing.
Yeah. Okay. So I would say this. And one day after class, somebody shoved this little sort of pamphlet at me. He was one of the seminarians, I think. I think he was one of the seminarians. And he gave it to me. He just said he wanted me to see it. Well, I was nonplussed. I didn't get his name. I don't know anymore what he looked like. I didn't know what to expect. I read it, and it was all about El Shaddai, which is entirely new to me. I had no idea what El Shaddai was. Well, El Shaddai, it turns out, is the name of the goddess, and she is the name of, really, of God. When Abraham, when the very first, the earliest ancestors of the Jews, came into Canaan. She was the first name of God, and the name El Shaddai means the breasted one. The breasted one. In our Bibles, at least in the Catholic, well, I think in most Bibles, the name El Shaddai, it's the Hebrew name, is translated the Almighty One. And that that name was turned into the name of a war god, which is so contrary to her real meaning. And if we go into, I have information about the Almighty and the treatment of the Almighty in Genesis and in Exodus. And there it's clear that she was a fertility goddess because she's talked about that way. Well, this little pamphlet that he put into my hands was the beginning of my education about it. And it's so wonderful that it was a man who knew that what I was saying was the truth.
So let me just make sure I understood what you said. El Shaddai was around before Yahweh, but they turned the breasted one into the Almighty, and she becomes a war god instead.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's
they changed her sex, they changed her name, they changed her from being breasted to being a war god, which,
mm-hmm.
you know, makes me, I mean, they did that to a lot of the goddesses, you know, the goddesses
mm-hmm.
became war
exactly.
goddesses. I mean, I even think
yeah.
Sekhmet, you know, that one story we have about Sekhmet going on a rampage, you know, it's as if she were even a mercenary for her father Ra.
I don't know who
Sekhmet is a lion-headed Egyptian goddess that...
I don't know her. Okay.
Yeah, a lot of women look to her these days as sort of an archetype of women's empowerment
mm-hmm.
because if you look at the attributes of a mother lion, you know, you can see all of these different things that, you know, you might want to embody, you know,
mm-hmm.
know, courageous,
mm-hmm.
fearlessness, you know, protective, you know, all of those sorts of things.
Yeah.
And, you know, she has this myth where she goes on a killing spree for her father Ra because humanity was not behaving itself and they had to drug her so she didn't kill all of humanity. Well, you know, I think, and I can't prove this because there's nothing out there to back it up, but that's the only story we have about her. But I can't help but think that that was a patriarchal distortion, either making us fear women or making women fear their own power, you know.
Mm-hmm. But what we haven't talked about yet, Karen, is how psychologically it makes a difference when we imagine the ultimate power to be feminine, the difference between that and when we imagine that power to be male.
We'll speak to that then, please.
Male power, and I don't know what it would be if we hadn't lived with patriarchy for thousands of years, but male power today stands for militarism and aggressiveness and command and control. And feminine power today stands for nurturing, cooperation, reaching out to people, connecting with people, including the opposite of domineering.
Mm-hmm.
Domineering is male. Cooperating is female. Now, we don't know what would happen after thousands of years of women being in charge, but today it's certainly the case that as women are gaining more influence in society, society is also becoming less, more gentle and less militaristic, although yeah, there is this testosterone in young men, and they go on the rampage. But generally, for instance, when I had my children in the 1970s, when I went to the doctor, it was always just women. Now we see men taking children, taking little babies to the doctor. There's an increasing number of house husbands.
Mm-hmm.
When I go to schools, I see men coming there to pick up their children. The picture has changed immensely in the decades since I've been around.
Well, you know, I was thinking President Obama made the comment last night in the State of the Union about, you know, we're not living in a Mad Men episode, you know, about, mm-hmm. you know, women deserve an equal pay. And that's mm-hmm. what I was thinking about. You know, back then you look at these movies and you see how women lived. Another great HBO show that's on hiatus right now is The Masters of Sex, about the Masters and Johnson study, you know, the study in sexuality, but in that you really saw how women's lives were so limited and the roles, mm-hmm. you know, the roles of men and women were so regimented. But yeah, I do think we're having a blurring of the genders to a certain extent. You know, I've talked on the show with other guests about how men need new role models, you know.
They're finding them now, too. Another thing, now I lost my thought. I'm sorry. Oh, I was going to say that even conservative politicians now have gotten on the bandwagon of supporting women's causes. And the conservatives who are saying stupid things, really, are scolded by other conservative politicians.
Well, I haven't found that yet, Jeanette. You should send me those links, because it seems like these crazy conservatives are just out of their mind with ignorance.
But moderate Republicans are appalled, and they say so.
I guess I'm not listening in the right places, because it seems like all of this is going unchecked, you know?
Oh, it's not going unchecked. Well, for instance, in the last election, there were it's generally conceded that Republicans lost elections I think there were three prominent elections in the Senate and House were lost because the Republican chosen to run was, you know, somebody who came off, who put out...
Crazy. Yeah, but they haven't changed their policies, you know. They've just, I mean, just the other day, Huckabee was talking about women's libidos and...
what the response was to him. Republicans are aghast, and they're going to silence him.
Well, But what worries me, Jeanette, is they're just driving what they really think underground so that they can fool people. Because they're not going to change how they really think about this stuff. You know,
well,
if those kinds of people get in office, you know, we're going to lose Roe v. Wade. I mean, Well, we might not lose it because it would take an amendment to the Constitution, but, you know, they've made it so that in so many states, so many of the clinics have closed. Mm-hmm. So
they're doing away
with it that way instead of rid of the law.
That's right, piece by piece. But I do think that the tide will turn. And I think what most Americans want, most Americans, well, including those who support Roe v. Wade, most Americans want abortion to be available, but they want less of it. Well, everybody
mm-hmm.
wants less of it. And
I think
as the information comes out, it becomes clear that the way to have less of it is not to make it impossible for reasonable abortions to take place.
And it's not teaching sex ed either, you know.
Right.
I mean, you know, they just expect abstinence to work or not teaching any sex ed to be the solution. And that's ignorant, you know. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Yeah. Right.
Well, listen, let's shift gears a little bit before we run out of time. You wanted to talk a little bit about Pope Francis. And I wanted to hear what you wanted to say about atheism and materialism.
Oh, all right. Pope Francis, he's wonderful. I am really pleased that he is turned into a rock star, because he deserves it. The one blind spot he has is women. And it's not only that he has the blind spot. I think actually he is capable of learning about women, because he changed a little bit in his attitude toward gays. He is capable of being educated. He could see what we're saying. He is capable of understanding it. The problem for him, even more than his blind spot about women, I think, is that he is so intensely loyal to Catholicism, and he is not going to go against the last two popes.
Hmm.
Although he has affirmed John the 23rd. He speaks like John the 23rd, you know, open up the windows and let fresh air in, and change the attitudes in the church. He does that. But John Paul said, you know, we're closing the door on ordination, and Francis is not going to change that. That's the problem. He is saddled by his loyalty to the two popes who preceded him. And I wouldn't be surprised to learn that he has softened his attitude, his inner attitude toward women, even in the few months that he's been in office.
Well, I know you wrote him a letter. Was there any reply at all?
No, there was no reply. Several people, I don't know if you know that how that happened. It was a religious sister who is a friend of mine who suggested that I write a letter to the Pope. And I said, oh, no, you know, I just did not have a good attitude toward it. And I said, I don't even have his address. So she sent me his address. and then I mentioned it to some other religious sisters, and, oh, they thought that was a wonderful idea. And then one day I received a phone call from somebody in Rochester, Minnesota, which is, you know, I've never been to Rochester, even though it's a very famous place, home of the Mayo Clinic. And it was also a religious sister, and she called, I don't know how she found me, called me on the telephone, apologized for calling me, and asked me to please write a letter to Pope Francis.
So why were these other women all afraid? Did they have something to lose?
Oh, yes. Religious sisters in the United States were hounded by, what's his name, Ratzinger, Benedict the 16th. It was Ratzinger.
Well, I know that, you know, the radical feminists. Line. Is that what you're referring to? The nuns weren't behaving?
No. Leaders of women religious in the United States were investigated and were scolded by Ratzinger, Benedict. And,
yeah, because they weren't pressing the homosexual agenda. And they were,
there were several charges. They were accused of not being quite orthodox, of preaching things that were not consistent with dogma, and what else? There were some charges against them, and they weren't even allowed to defend themselves, to talk about it. And Francis, when he came in, he did not change what had been done before. He just took the same line, and and women religious. The convents around the United States were formally investigated by the Vatican.
You know, that's ridiculous.
It was just so outrageous.
You know, that just makes me so angry, you know. And look, I agree with you about Pope Francis. I am so glad he's coming out, you know, talking against greed, you know, saying
right.
that, you know, we shouldn't judge homosexuality, all of that sort of stuff.
Right.
But I'm really disappointed that he's still going to be a dinosaur about women. You know, I'm sorry. I don't know.
Well,
I maybe can like him a little bit, but I'm not going to. I don't think I'm going to like him a lot.
he does say that he wants to appoint women to influential positions. See, which is one reason that I think a big part of his problem, maybe the biggest part, is that he's loyal to previous popes. And he doesn't want to undo. He doesn't want to go directly against what they've ordered.
But you know
they're,
what? That's too bad.
Anyway,
he's going
to appoint some women to influential positions. So, you know, it's something.
It's something. It's crumbs. He's throwing us some crumbs.
Right.
Okay,
that's
so the atheism and the materialism. Why don't you start by telling listeners the difference between agnostics and atheists?
Oh, agnostics say that we just don't know. And atheists say there definitely is no God.
Okay.
Do you know Bishop Spong? Maybe you even have interviewed
no.
him. Bishop
no.
Spong is an Episcopal bishop who... He says the same things that we do. He talks about the patriarchy and so on. Bishop Spong says what's wrong with Christianity is theism. Theism is belief in an external deity. And so I say I am an atheist too. I don't believe in the God that atheists scorn. You know, it's a god, small g. It's a male idol. It's an individual. It's a human-like figure.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not God. That's not
mm-hmm.
the source of all that is.
Right.
And so I say I am actually a Catholic atheist. However, I am not a materialist. Some atheists go so far as to say there is no spiritual reality. And that's different from saying, I don't believe in that God, that father who supposedly had an only son and sent him down to the earth to die, you know.
Right.
That's a God, small g. And I don't believe in that God either. But scientific materialism claims that there is no such thing as spiritual reality at all. All of our thoughts, our consciousness, our desires, our intentions, our intelligence, our minds, that's all just material reality. It's all formed by our brain.
Or energy, maybe, they're saying, huh? But
no,
so
they don't even... They say energy is physical. Everything is physical.
It's physical. That's why it's material. But they can't attach a spiritual.
There's nothing spiritual. There is nothing immaterial that exists.
Okay.
And I think that's nonsense. Now I suppose we're getting abstract again. I mean, is this hard for people to understand? To me, it just seems so weird. Claim that there is nothing that is how can thought be physical? The thought created by our brains? That doesn't make sense to me. Anyway, that's the difference between materialism and atheism.
Okay,
and,
so
and
atheism, you still believe there's some spirituality.
Mm-hmm.
So there's several different types of atheism, obviously.
There are. That's what I'm saying, that there are different types of atheism. And back to agnosticism, I think that agnostics, the agnostics that I know, that I've read and listened to, really do believe in spiritual reality, as far as I know.
But they're agnostic because they just don't really know what it is?
They say we can't know what it is. There is something more than material reality. I think agnostics would admit that. Oh, Karen, you haven't read. I just posted put a new post on today, and I talk about agnosticism and I talk about Einstein and Carl Sagan, the scientists, and I think both of them were. They are saying what I say, which is, it depends on what you, the question is not, do you believe in God? The question is, what is your idea of God? And Einstein certainly had some ideas of God, and Carl Sagan goes along with what Einstein said. And Einstein has a beautiful description of God.
It's and you have this all on your blog?
It's all in my blog. Yes,
so let's give your blog again. I want to go back and look at it myself. God is not threeguys.com, right?
Mm-hmm. And the three is the Arabic numeral. It's not spelled out.
Right.
threeguys.com. Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, Jeanette, I always love when you send me your links. You always get me thinking, and I love that you are a Christian that that I can talk to and we can agree with each other, on a lot of things. I think because we really do have so much more in common than not. And, always love
than not. I don't know whether we disagree at all, do we?
Oh, I think you might like the Pope a little bit more than me, but I'm kidding.
That's not a big thing either.
No, it's not. But we're starting to run short on time here. I do have someone on the switchboard who's been here for a while. Let me just check in with them and see if they had a question, but they might have just been listening. So hold on just a second.
Okay.
Hi, you're calling from the 314 area code. Did you have a question?
No,
oh, I guess not.
I didn't have a question.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Oh, you're listening. Okay, well, thank you. Please continue to listen, and I appreciate you listening to the show. So, Jeanette, was there anything else we wanted to chat about? I mean, did you want to talk more about the atheism and the materialism and the agnostic or the Carl Sagan stuff?
In an email, you mentioned that maybe I could talk about pagans and Christians, the parallels.
Yeah, actually, that was one of the things that caught my eye. You'd put a blog up about the pagan and Christian traditions. Do you remember what that content was? Because I haven't read it in a little while.
Yeah, well, because you mentioned it, I went back to my blog post and I printed it out, and so I have it in front of me now.
Oh, good.
Some of the parallels. The pagans did a lot of the things that Christians took up. And it's obvious to me that Christians were copying pagans because pagans had liturgies that solemnly commemorated and ritually enacted a deity's life, death, and resurrection. And that's what Christians then did. They have this solemn commemoration in the Mass of a deity, God, Jesus God, his life, death, and resurrection. Pagan mystery religions had confessions, they had purifications, they had healing, successful healing, they talked about salvation. Christians definitely got the idea of salvation, soteria, from pagans.
There was salvation in the Isis and Osiris mysteries and
the mysteries. Because
so many of the goddesses and gods, it was the dying and rising king. You know, Jesus was just another in the line of another dying and rising god.
And Christians called the Mass, even today, Catholics call the Mass the mystery. That was directly out of paganism.
Yeah.
They had sacred meals, like our Eucharist. They had prayers of thanksgiving. They had sacred texts. They had accounts of visions and miracle stories and incense and confessions, and they had something like creeds, they had liturgies. Some of the verses in our New Testament actually must have been verses that originally were songs to pagan heroes. One of my theology texts has examples of this. And I have it in my book, God is Not Three Guys in the Sky. I give examples, I give definite passages in our New Testament that were first songs in honor of pagan deities.
Well, they co-opted so much stuff, including, the pagan temples. They just went ahead and built their temples right on top of the sacred sites.
Exactly. Yeah. And figurines. There's one favorite one of Jesus sitting on the lap of Mary. And those figurines were first in honor of Isis and Horus.
Mm-hmm.
Horus is the child sitting on the lap of Isis.
Right.
Christians took those same figurines and just changed the names.
Yeah. Well, I mean, because you see some black Madonnas in France where when you remove the paint, a lot of times you find out that it was really Isis underneath to begin with. And you know, and some scholars will tell you that those dark Madonnas, the black ones and the brown ones, that there's, you know, some of them think maybe they were a little bit more closely related to goddess as nature, you know, the dark
yes.
earth kind of an idea, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Not every place, and not everybody agrees, but that's sort of an interesting theory, too.
It's certainly a possibility. There's
mm-hmm.
more from paganism than we'd like to admit, than Christians would like to admit. Something else
so
that
true.
We haven't mentioned. Roman emperors were called Lord and God and Son of God and Savior. These titles that were given to Jesus were used in honor of pagan deities. Yes, the Roman emperors were deities.
Mm-hmm.
So even those titles.
Well, you know, I guess my dream is one day, you know, instead of hearing Bill O'Reilly on Fox News crying about the war on Christmas, someone will come on his show and tell him about all of the pagan stuff that was co-opted by the Christians, that they didn't even have much that was original.
It would be nice to have this on television. It really would be nice. Yeah.
Well, you know, I'm so tired of the United States networks being afraid of smart programming. I just saw on PBS, they were playing back a BBC special called Divine Women. It's actually a three-part series, and I saw part two. The first part was about goddess. The second part was about the role priestesses played and how women started out as really a big part of Christianity,
mm-hmm.
and how Paul gets a bad rap, that Paul really wasn't anti-woman. It started with Augustine, who was this lusty guy who even got the family maid pregnant, and then suddenly decides that lust is a bad thing, so he creates
mm-hmm.
original sin, and, you know, Eve becomes the bad one, and sex becomes taboo, and, you know, I wonder what would have happened if Augustine hadn't come along. You know, you think of the damage that man did.
No, I have to correct you, because before, and I say Augustine, before him, and he lived around the year 400, but before him, the New Testament was written. And if you go to the New Testament, you know those horrible passages about women in the New Testament. You know, women are, they can't speak in church and this and that. That stuff was written in the second, probably the very beginning of the second century. So, the first generation women, the first generation of the Jesus movement, women were active and powerful and accepted as ordained. You know, they were deacons. I don't know whether they had ordination, but they served in the same positions as men did. And then in just a few generations, it changed already. Yeah.
Well, then they didn't do their homework then on the show, because they laid it all at Augustine's footsteps, you know.
Well,
he
was a bad one, but no, he didn't start it.
Because
he lived around, as I said, around the year 400, and patriotism was well entrenched in the Christian movement by that time. Yeah.
Okay.
So.
Well, Jeanette, it's probably getting to be that time I'm going to have to say goodnight, but is there anything else you wanted to share with listeners before you go?
Back to some parallels between paganism and Christians. We haven't mentioned Paul as specifically getting his, I think a lot of Paul's spiritualities, and we're talking about the Apostle Paul, you know, the one who wrote those epistles. Paul got this idea of the new creation theme. Thou hast made us while still in the body, divine by the sight of thyself. That sounds very much like some pagan prayers to Hermes. Or anyone in Christ is a new creation. So things like that were said in pagan ceremonies. All that matters is that one is created anew. It's a pagan idea.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like reincarnation rebirth some kind of a way.
It's the idea of divinity within, Christ in us. Yeah.
Okay.
Divinity in within. When I was going to the School of Theology, this wonderful, renowned theologian, Godfrey Diekmann, was one of my instructors. I just love having been with him. And he was talking about the mystery of the divinity within, the body of Christ. He was always talking about the body of Christ, and he was sad that the Catholic Church didn't make enough of it. And I asked him in class whether this was an idea unique to Christianity or whether other religions had it. And he looked at me surprised, and he said, "I don't know." And the reason I asked him is I must have run into it someplace, and now I could tell him that it is a common theme, not only in the West, but in Hinduism and Buddhism, too. Divinity within. You know, the namaste.
Mm-hmm.
Quite familiar, I'm sure, with namaste.
Right.
It's
yeah, that greeting, you're greeting the divine.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. That human beings have a divinity within. We are waves of the ocean that we call infinity or God.
When I was taking Kabbalah, you know, it was all about the light, it's emanation theology, you know, and the light comes down, and we are all sparks, you know, we are all sparks of that light, same
right.
sort of thing.
Right, a different metaphor saying the same thing. Right,
yeah.
And Paul talked about it, but it's not an idea that's very prominent in Christianity today.
Don't you think that's because, you know, they don't teach that you have divinity within, do they?
Right.
I mean,
it's in our tradition, but today's Christians are not aware of it.
It's
an important part of Christian tradition, but ordinary Christians today don't know it.
Well, what about the Gnostics? Did they acknowledge the divinity within?
Yes. The Gnostics are another whole chapter, aren't they? Another whole area of study.
Yeah, because they were
like the Gnostics.
He did or didn't?
He did.
He did.
Yes.
Yeah.
He liked the Gnostics. Uh-huh.
Yeah, because they were heretics too, as far as the church was concerned.
They're right. Yes, that's right.
Well, I like all the heretics. What can I say?
Well, Jeanette,
go ahead.
No, I don't. It's not worth
it. You were
saying
about heretics.
Well, heretics are. Einstein says something about that too. He says that mysticism and this awareness of the great power in the universe, it comes to people like the heretics and the mystics, the saints, the people who are out of the ordinary.
Yeah. Well, you know, I like that because I like not being ordinary. I don't want to be one of the sheeple. And, you know, I think it's a lot more interesting to question and talk about these things than it is to just sit there and recite stuff by rote and never even think, you know, with no critical thinking about it at all, you know.
And to speak out is a matter of integrity. For some of us, we can't not do it. We have to speak out. It's just a driving force.
Well, and I even have this theory about the devil. I mean, you know, the devil, was a fallen angel. And I almost wonder, I mean, maybe that's a whole nother show. We don't have that much time. But, you know, I think of it, you know, maybe the devil really got a bad rap just because he disagreed with God. You know, how dare he question God?
But that story of Satan, that's a fairly late story, too. Satan, now I can't remember what I read about it lately, but Satan was not always this... this fellow who, well, the myth about him that you just mentioned, I think that's fairly late in our tradition.
Okay.
Satan didn't start out being that guy who was a fallen angel. And I can't tell you anymore. I forget. I forget the details.
Because, you know, I can relate to that, you know, not, you know, defying authority, questioning authority. I would never make
a good
soldier. You know, they'd say, go take that hill, and I'd say, why? You take it.
Well, I have to admit, I didn't become like that until, after the midpoint of my life, I would say.
Yeah.
I questioned before that. I did critical thinking, but I didn't become defiant.
God has made me defiant. When I found out that I spent the first 30 years of my life being lied to and duped, then I got defiant. And, I will question everything now. I don't care who says what. You know, they don't get the benefit of the doubt just because they're somebody important.
Right.
You know, and if they're right, they're right. We'll talk about it, you know, but, you know, I'm just not that good with authority anymore. And I used to be a really good girl. The dog never ate my homework.
Yeah, that's the way I was. Right.
Well, Jeanette, it's been a whole lot of fun talking to you tonight. It always is. And,
right.
So, you know, if you think about it, please send me that link again about Sagan, and I want to make sure I don't forget to read that. And the name of that bishop, too, I mean, he's probably too big of a person. You know,
I need to do that.
Maybe I could get him on my radio show. That would that might be a lot of fun.
That would be wonderful. Yes.
Okay.
Bishop Don Spong. Uh-huh. Okay.
All right. All right. So send me that. I will be looking forward to it. And please stay warm.
That's another. We could have a whole radio show on that.
Yeah, I posted this great picture on Facebook. They showed this gargoyle that was on a building, and water had been pouring out of its mouth, and it all just turned to ice. It was beautiful, actually, you know, and we're seeing all of these videos from back east where people are blowing bubbles, big bubbles, and, you know, no sooner the bubble comes out and it turns into this beautiful icy thing, you know.
Sure.
Some level, it must be a lot of fun, but I wouldn't want to live in it. I'd become housebound, I think.
We have to go out. We can't help it. We just have to go out, and it's no fun to be in that fierce wind. It is really dangerous at times. Yeah.
Well, and I can't even imagine driving on on the roads with it being slippery. I mean, here in California, people can't even drive decently when it rains. So I mean, you know, to put ice on the ground, I mean, that's a scary proposition.
Yeah, it is scary. That's true.
All right, Jeanette. Well, thank you so much, and I will be talking to you soon. Appreciate it, your time tonight.
This has been fun. Thank you.
Okay, good night.
Okay, good night. Bye.
Well, it's about that time, listeners. I have a word for you from Joe Carson, so please give a listen.
Most people's psychic experiences are dreaming, and it's thought that it's the pineal gland making this chemical that does it. Now, this was the core finding that the pineal gland makes a hallucinogen. We all hallucinate. We all go into a state of consciousness that for me is the collective unconscious. This psychic state is the collective unconscious, which is that consciousness of the planet, what's called the chthonic mind, the mind of the earth. because all peoples, all races, all tribes from the past and right around the world have myths and legends which use symbols and archetypes which are identical. Identical. Every human being experiences this state of consciousness, which is the dream mind, that symbolic, archetypal, exemplified by fairy tales, or the creation myths and legends of all the different peoples. The symbols of them are the same, and to me that is the consciousness of the earth speaking to us.
Well, that was Serena Roney Dougal, Ph.D., speaking in Joe Carson's film, Dancing with Gaia. Dancing with Gaia explores the connection between earth energy, sacred sexuality, and the goddess as Gaia. It features 15 visionaries, such as Serena Roney Dougal, who give us tools to feel the life of the planet within ourselves. The DVD comes with a 45-page mini-book and only costs $20. You can get it your own copy at dancingwithgaia.com. And if you haven't heard me say it before, listeners, I have seen it. It is a wonderful film. I think you would want it for your library. And please don't forget the three F's. Click the follow button on my show page so you don't miss news of the wonderful guests that come on the show and share their insight each week. The second F is to become a friend of the growing family of Voices of the Sacred Feminine listeners across the globe and across the United States. The third F is for Facebook. Please like my pages on Facebook. There's now a Voices of the Sacred Feminine radio page and pages for my three books, which are Walking an Ancient Path, Sacred Places of Goddess, 108 Destinations, and the new one, Goddess Calling. And if you go to one of these pages and tell me you heard that I'm giving away books to the first three listeners I hear from, you might just be a winner of my award-winning book, Walking an Ancient Path, Rebirthing Goddess on Planet Earth. It was a finalist in the USA National Best Books in 2008. It discusses how one can work with divine feminine energy and helps one get ideas about traveling to sacred sites, doing ritual, and being inspired by goddess. I actually talk about some pretty revealing esoteric things, share some personal stories, magical stories that happen when I believe goddess really listened and interceded in my life and changed the path that I was on. And Goddess Calling, it's available in March. You can go to Amazon right now and pre-order it at a discount. I believe it's under $20 if you get it now, which includes shipping and handling. It's about how ideals of the sacred feminine liberate us from patriarchy and give us a template for sustainable living. So please go to Amazon now and get your 20% discount. And as we come to the end of tonight's show, I want you to remember something very important, lest we never forget. It is important to repeat and to punctuate it again and again. You know, we are the cognitive minority. Just like the scientists who were trying to convince medieval Christians and the church that the world was not flat and the sun did not revolve around the earth, we have an important message with the sacred feminine ideals of liberation theology. And as Gandhi said, first they ignore you, then they laugh at you, then they fight you, then you win. Well, thank you, listeners, for tuning in tonight. I'm going to leave you with some music by Celia. I think since our show started off about feng shui and space clearing, I'm going to play this by Celia, and it's called Bless This Space. Please tune in with me next week. I'll be back with you next Wednesday. Have a wonderful week. Stay warm if you're back east, and be true to yourself and may Goddess embrace you in her golden wings. Good night.
Please bless this space, this sanctuary. Peace and death. Please, please.